Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with John Wells. Our next guest is Kevin Holden. He's the head of synthetic biology for Synthego, a genome engineering company. Kevin will help us understand, what is CRISPR? How does it work? What are its capabilities and what are its shortcomings? Also, what are the ethical questions surrounding this new technology? Kevin Holden, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Well, CRISPR, clusters of regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats. I didn't know that, actually, until I looked it up, and it doesn't really matter because we know it as CRISPR gene editing technology. Can you just give us an overview of the most simplistic explanation of how it works?
Yeah, okay. So actually, the name CRISPR is alluding to the way that this system actually was first described in bacterial organisms. So it's a technology that can be used to trigger what we call a break in a genome. So it could be a human genome, it could be a plant genome. And essentially what it is, it's a biological system that was native to bacteria that bacteria use in order to provide immunity and defense to themselves from viruses. And the way they do this is they can store pieces of viral DNA in their own genomes and later recognize these and then remove them from their genomes. And so there was some very smart work to identify these by a scientist in Spain, Francisco Mojica. And then later, it was people kind of realized, like, hey, you know, this idea that you could actually target a specific piece of DNA and remove it or actually cause a break in the genome was first shown by Jennifer Doudna, UC Berkeley, and some others. And, you know, really that you could adapt this technology as a molecular biology tool to interrogate, for example, the human genome or the genome of any living organism.
Yes, we think of the human genome as being sort of perfectly formed, and yet we are inflicted with many diseases that CRISPR technology could improve, could eliminate. But we know that the ethical concerns of CRISPR technology are huge, and this is what we hear about in the news. We've got, you know, the no-brainers in applying CRISPR technology to help, you know, improve the lives of people that may be suffering from MS or cystic fibrosis, Huntington's disease. But then we've got that other thing that says, oh, let's make designer babies. So maybe you could just talk a little bit about that, the two extremes and then the gray area in the middle.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's very important before we dive right into that to really understand what's powerful about CRISPR. So because if you can use this tool to initiate a break in a genome, a human genome, for example, then that genome has to repair itself. It's part of life. And we should all remember that the genomes of ourselves, every cell in our body, of course, contains our entire genome. These genomes are very dynamic. And so literally every day, there are pieces of this genome are shifting around. They're cutting, they're breaking, they're being repaired. And so essentially CRISPR is taking what is occurring naturally in our genomes and sort of giving humans, us, the ability to program exactly how we want to make those breaks and repairs. So, you know, there are definitely many applications for this technology, particularly when it comes to trying to cure a genetic disease, for example. So if a person has a mutation in a gene that inflicts a disease, a very common one, people talk about a sickle cell anemia because it arises from a single DNA-based mutation. We could actually go in there. We could actually make a cut in that gene and actually switch the nucleotide that's wrong in for the correct one. So, you know, as you say, there are many different applications for this. We can this could be used for doing gene editing in a plant, for example, where you could create a mutation that occurs naturally in nature that perhaps gives the resistant of that plant to some kind of disease. And then you could program it into another plant. So now you've made that plant resistant to a disease, and we can all grow more crops and feed everybody. So yeah, I think there's definitely been highlighted some of the kind of more, nefarious kind of ideas about using this technology. Mm-hmm. But it really does require a lot of knowledge about what you're doing in order to specifically make those changes. Obviously there was news that came out about utilizing this technology to generate a child that actually had a specific change. There has been kind of a moratorium called on this, self-imposed moratorium by the scientific community for doing this. The work that was done was highly criticized by the scientific community because it focused on making a gene editing change in a disease that is actually very manageable nowadays, which is HIV. So, there can be some fears around this technology. I'm not sure that putting a moratorium for an indefinite period of time is necessarily a good thing, because it kind of raises the specter of something, if you will, by just saying, let's not do this. There are different ways that we can protect the health of children that are born genetically, besides using gene editing technology, through things like prenatal screening, genetic testing, and so forth. But I think when cases like this occur, and I'm sure more will occur, it kind of raises the idea that, hey, this could be used in a particularly bad way.
And the technology is so new. How can you ensure that the proper testing has been done? Because it's just stuff that we've never done before.
Yeah, I mean, it's a legitimate concern. I think that, in general, like I mentioned, using this technology, although it can be relatively easy to obtain the materials you need to do the CRISPR-type experiments. And these materials are quite readily available for scientists. In fact, this is one part of what my company, Synthego, does, is that we'll make materials for doing CRISPR gene editing more accessible to scientists. Even though you can access those materials, it takes an incredible amount of knowledge to understand what you're doing in terms of manipulating a human embryo. You need to have all the right settings. You need to be literally in a hospital type environment. So I don't think this is a kind of technology that we're going to see, at least in the Western world, be heavily abused. I think there is a good understanding among scientists that we now have this power, if you will, to manipulate genomes much more easily, and we have to. It's on us to maintain the responsibility of utilizing that.
And because it's so difficult to work with this, or not difficult, but you really have to know what you're doing. There's probably a lot of researchers that are staying away from it. So that's where your company comes in. You provide some inexpensive tools so that they can focus on research, and you can help them with the CRISPR side.
Yeah, that's right. So I think people like to talk about CRISPR, and it's used for things like curing disease. It could be used to build particular types of immune cells, T cells, that can be used to fight cancer, for example, and perhaps generating crops that are resistant to disease to feed the world. But the biggest use of CRISPR that's out there right now is actually for research purposes. And so it's a really powerful molecular biology tool because, like I said, you can go in and make a specific change to a genome. So many diseases and pharmaceutical drugs are actually discovered and researched using just cells that are growing in the lab. And so in order to build models of these diseases and to study them better and to understand them and to design new drugs, for example, you need to be able to manipulate those genomes. And before CRISPR came around, this was actually extremely difficult to do. And so it's taken the ability to manipulate genomes in those cells that people are researching literally, three or four orders of magnitude more easy. And so one of the things that Synthego as a company likes to do is not only provide the materials that people can use to do that on their own in the lab is that we can actually also engineer cells for people to use for research purposes in their labs as well. So we built automated systems for generating these cells that people are using to study. So it really means that scientists don't have to spend a lot of time learning these techniques. And so we're hoping to help build standardization through research practices this way.
Our guest is Kevin Holden. He's the head of synthetic biology for Synthego, a genome engineering company. Also, Kevin, it seems as though Synthego, in what you're talking about, and also if you peruse the website a bit, is really about getting the correct information out there about CRISPR technology, to the extent that you have a podcast called CRISPR Cuts, and it's dedicated to the world of genome engineering. Can you talk about the podcast? I'm picturing that people that are really interested in this might be interested in tuning into this podcast.
Yeah, so we actually have a blog. It's called The Bench Blog on Synthego's website. And it features the podcast. It features another segment we do, which are just, we call CRISPR conversations. And they're essentially conversations with scientists who are utilizing CRISPR in their research work. The same for the podcast with CRISPR Cuts. So we're out there, we're interviewing scientists, and we're trying to educate not only the scientific community and our peers, but also the public in general about the types of research and work that this technology is being utilized for. So yeah, it really is a great way to kind of introduce yourself to the technology, because we have a lot of learning materials on the website, and also to learn about what others are doing in this field. And it really, you know, when you have a new technology like this, it really is on, the onus is on the users of that technology to really educate everybody about its uses, its potential pitfalls, and what's so fantastic about it.
Absolutely. Can you give us an example or two of some of the research and some of the work that's been done that shows, I mean, you've already talked about a lot of the promise, and what's one of those outliers that you hear about the research and you go, wow, I didn't even think of that myself. What a great application.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few of those. One of the ones that I've learned about, you know, quite recently, is that people are actually utilizing this technology to build diagnostic tools. So because you can identify a specific piece of DNA or RNA using this technology, and you can target it. So the way that CRISPR works is you have a protein, a nuclease, that is programmed, if you will, by a piece of RNA, and Synthego makes those pieces of RNA. And once you program that protein, it will recognize a sequence that you want to cut. So you can think of many different applications for this. And there's been several companies now that have sprung up. One is called Mammoth Technologies out of UC Berkeley. The other is called Sherlock Technology, which came from out of the Broad Institute. And essentially what these companies are doing is they're utilizing this power of detecting a piece of DNA or RNA, cutting it, and using that in a diagnostic approach. So you could use it to, for example, detect Zika virus in a sample. And the level of specificity that you can get from using these molecules is extremely high. So there's a way here that we can utilize this technology to detect diseases in the environment, diseases in plants. You could use it to detect the presence of different proteins that come from different organisms. There's a wide range of applications there. So I think that could really impact human health and just the world we live in by being able to detect pathogens, for example, in the environment or in as a test that you just take when you go into the hospital and somebody takes a very small sample from you just to try to detect if you have a certain disease or not.
Kevin, Synthego is privately held. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And are you venture capital financed?
Yes, we are.
Okay, and you're in Silicon Valley. Is that correct also?
Yeah, that's correct. So we're kind of on the edge of Silicon Valley, sort of halfway between San Francisco and San Jose down there.
Sure, okay. So as Synthego continues to evolve as a company, are you interested in being acquired or going public? Do you have any interest in working towards those right now?
I think that might be a question you'll have to ask the founders of the company. I think there's very much a drive for the company to become a public company. We're actually not just a biotechnology company. The company was founded by a couple of engineers that came from SpaceX that had, some pretty cool ideas about how they wanted to build automation in the biology world and synthetic biology, biotechnology world. And so we're really kind of a neat company because we layer in not just science, but also engineering and computational biology, bioinformatics. So, we've built these systems to essentially do large-scale synthesis of these RNA molecules that you can use to target, use for targeting in CRISPR, and also to build cell lines for people. And so there are different levels of abstraction that could come from that. Maybe in the future, we'll actually not just sell people reagents or cells, but we'll sell people data. We can do assays for them. Perhaps in the future, we'll actually be generating the RNA material in large quantities that we can use for people to use in the clinic directly. So there's many different avenues that I think the company can explore. The fact that we have a strong background in engineering as well, hardware and software, helps this company become stronger and build a very strong portfolio. So, yeah, I'd say we're definitely focused on heading towards the public company landscape.
Well, there's a lot of advantages to being a strong engineering firm, and I would think that a lot of research facilities and even large companies, as they were thinking about sticking their toe in the water, they would rather not do it in-house. They could work with a company like yours to help to get them started, and you could also maybe do some consulting with these clients as well and build an entire consulting business. Has that been talked about?
I think, we're definitely always exploring partnerships with large companies. We have some in place. I think if people look at us and they think, hey, we can leverage your technology and your expertise in order to help us build our research workflows and platforms more efficiently. So that's definitely something as a company that we're very interested in. Yeah.
The website is synthego.com. That's SYNTHEGO. You can find the Bench blog if you'd like to read more. And if you like to listen, find CRISPR Cuts. You can also, I'm sure, find that anywhere you get your podcasts. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then also in terms of, so there's so much awareness that your company's trying to do. And then there are products too, engineered cells and CRISPR kits, what you're calling revolution kits. Can you talk just briefly, and we have just a minute left, about these kinds of products that you're representing?
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, CRISPR, even though it's this transformative technology, it can be a little challenging to use. It requires quite a large degree of optimization depending on the systems that you're working in, the cell types, for example. And so, Synthego is really focused on trying to make this technology easier for scientists to use and to adapt into their research. Our goal is really to try to make the use of these technologies easier, faster, cheaper, be able to help scientists to apply this technology to their work. So the products and the services that we have, the bioinformatic tools that we offer actually for free to use on the website as well, these are all geared towards that directive.
We have a wonderful biotech engineering school at the University of Utah. So our graduates, what's it looking like on the job front at Synthego?
Yeah, so we're actually hiring. We've done quite a bit of expansion as a company in just the last year. We raised some significant capital. So definitely please check out synthego.com/, I think it's careers, and you can see some of the jobs we have available. We're always looking for great scientists, great engineers. Actually have visited University of Utah, so I do know about the great program there. So, please encourage people to apply.
All right. We like to hear that. Kevin Holden is our guest. He's the head of synthetic biology for Synthego, which is a genome engineering company in the Silicon Valley area. Again, if you're interested, it's synthego.com, S-Y-N-T-H-E-G-O. Kevin Holden, thank you so much for joining us on Cool Science Radio. It's been an interesting conversation.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Bye-bye.